Let's see. So today, Laura asked me to come. We're going to talk about community. And I think a lot of us have kind of a sense of dread when it comes to community. Sometimes we are really lonely and we want community and we don't have it. In the course of my work with women over the past 4 years, I hear that a lot. They see, I'm in a neighborhood where I'm really good friends with my neighbors, and so on Instagram, people will see that I have a lot of friends, in my neighborhood, and it's a blessing and it's great, and we'll talk about all that. But some of us are just really lonely, and we want community, and we don't have it. Some of us have people in our lives, but they're not the people we want. So we have community, but we don't like it. Or we feel like, I know, everyone talks about community, I'm supposed to have it. It's kind of like, I got to get my oil changed, I got to go to the women's doctor every year, and whatever. So the community is kind of like this should, right? And so we're going to talk about that today. God tells us to be in community, and in his word, we know he tells us things for our good. Like, he really is for us. But it doesn't feel good sometimes, and so we avoid it. So Hebrews 10:24 says, "Let us consider how to stir one another up to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near." So let us stir up. Let's consider how to stir up one another, basically to be in community, okay? And so, obviously, for me, the snow globe, I'm not like a snow globe person, but this just felt like it worked, right? So to stir up, and I thought of this super late, and I needed to get on the plane to come here, and so I Googled, like, where in Dallas do I find a snow globe? I don't even know. And the closest one said love inside of it. I was like, what, God? Like, stir up one another to love? Are you kidding me right now? Okay, so here we go. Why does he have to remind us to stir up? Because we don't want to do it. You don't have to remind me to drink coffee in the morning. And you don't have to remind my kids to eat 19 snacks after they come home from school. It comes naturally. So if in the Bible he tells us to stir up something, it's because there's a heaviness surrounding it that we have to be, we have to get all excited about it because it doesn't come natural. So why is community not natural? I came up with three reasons real quick. Community is awkward. Community is inconvenient. And community is disappointing. So those are my three points on my talk about community. I hope you leave encouraged. Just kidding. Okay, so the first reason we have to stir one another up to love and good works is because community is awkward. Can you relate? I think when we're little, we can be friends with whoever we see on the park. We do not need to know if they're a boy or a girl. Remember, like when your kids are like, is your friend a boy or a girl? I don't know. The whole thing is just like, it doesn't even matter. You're there, I'm there, there's a slide, we're friends. It's just different. But it's different when we're adults. The American Psychological Association did a study on almost 200,000 people from teenagers all the way up to the elderly, and they found that as you are approaching young adulthood, your social, you grow in the amount of friends you have. And then it steadily declines as we get older. Well, that's nice. So like today, you have more friends than you probably will tomorrow. So also in parenthood, as we become parents, for those of you who are parents, you have less time for friends and outings and all that fun stuff because you've got kids. And so our social networks kind of tend to shrink because of that as well. Also, social media is ironically making us very awkward to actually look at real eyeballs and talk to people. I noticed there's an app that's called Bumble BFF, and it is to find a best friend with an app. Does that make you... It makes me laugh, and it makes me like... So sad. Oh my gosh. The tagline is find your new best friend. Like, legit. It's startling, okay? Don't get on that app. Put your phones down. No, don't find your new best friend right now. I'll tell you a way to do it. So we know that the pool is getting smaller. A lot of it's because of it's awkward. Like, we don't want to go out and meet new people. But how do we kind of balance that with the fact that God said to do it? God said to be in community. One way to do it is just to think of the golden rule that I know I tell my kids every 5 minutes. Do unto others as you'd like them to do to you. That, it's so simple. If you think about it, Yes, it's simple. It's not hard, but it's difficult. Like it's not complicated. Like we don't understand how, but it's hard to actually work out. So I wanted to think about why is awkward such a thing? Why is awkward such a barrier? It's because of pride. We care so much about how we look and how others perceive us that we don't want to put ourselves out there because what if we mess up? Like I was thinking about these pants. I was so afraid I was going to trip up these steps. I want you guys to think I'm graceful. I'm not, but I want you to think I am. And I was the drum major of my high school marching band. Not something really to, brag about, but, and I had pants that were like this, but they were spandex and white. Yes, I was cool in 1998. And I would run, and I regularly got tripped up, and I fell so many times in front of, like, the whole football stadium. So anyway, we're worried about awkward because we're worried about our pride. And so this becomes a problem if we look at what Philippians 2 says, do nothing out of selfish ambition, but, you know, in humility, value others above yourself. Don't look to your interests, look to their interests. And someone said something that I really loved one time. They said, instead of when you walk into a room thinking, here I am, think, there you are. All of a sudden, you're thinking of them. You're not worried about if you're awkward and you're going to fall up the steps in your pants. You're looking at them and thinking about them. And we've also probably, most of us, heard that humility is not thinking less of yourself, but it's thinking of yourself less. So I think that a lot of times we can be less awkward and be worried about awkwardness in community situations if we just are thinking of ourselves less. So I wanted to be practical and look at what does Jesus do in the Gospels when he's interacting with people? Because he didn't seem to be looking too worried about awkward, I don't think. And so I wanted to look at some of the things Jesus did. He really saw people. That was the first thing. He wasn't multitasking and doing a bunch of stuff. And I think that it would be easy for us to say, but Jesus, it was Bible times. Would they ride around on donkeys? Like, what exactly were they? They didn't seem that busy. So, of course, they could really see people. But he, like, had 5,000 people following him around asking for lunch. You know, like he'd go somewhere to be alone and then have to get on a boat and go somewhere else because everybody was there. And so he had a serious paparazzi issue, if you think about it. And so he was more busy than us, or at least as busy. But when people came to him, he engaged with them and was very present, thinking of their good. So like when Lazarus died and he met the family and the sisters, he stopped everything and he wept. Like he was in it with them. When the woman who had been bleeding for 12 years, she touched his garment, he stopped and he turned and the Bible says he saw her. And so he was not too big of a deal to really focus on the other person. And I think we would be less concerned with awkward if we were looking and focusing on the other person. Another thing he did that I think would help us if we did it with the awkward was he called out the good things he saw. Who doesn't love being like, I love your shirt. I love that hair. Where'd you get those shoes? I'm not saying make up stuff, but call out the good in your girlfriends and the people you don't even know. But he told the same woman with the bleeding, he turned around, he saw her, and he said, take heart, daughter. He called her what she was, not unclean, outcast, probably it was female issues, so maybe she was barren. So he didn't call her what the world called her. He called her what she actually was, which is daughter. So it's important to, we may feel silly calling out a bunch of good stuff about people, but it's important. Our words have life. Proverbs 18:21 says, death and life are in the tongue. So let's speak life. Sometimes we have to get past the awkward of what will she think if I say this thing. But if it's true, who cares? Some other examples of Jesus calling out the good. In Matthew 8, there was a centurion, and he had a lot of faith that Jesus would heal his son, and he openly marveled at the faith of that guy. He praised Mary for choosing to sit at his feet over Martha, who was doing stuff in the kitchen. I don't like that story. I'm a Martha. I think Mary should have helped, but that's fine. He didn't ask me what I thought. He praised the woman who washed his feet with her tears. He praised her openly for what she did. This is what I love. I love this one. Peter, if you're familiar with Peter, he was one of the disciples, but like really messed up. That guy messed everything up. I love him. He's my favorite. But Jesus called him, so his name was Simon, and that means like flighty or pigeon, like not strong guy. It means like, ooh. Who knows where that, what, you know, like kind of, he's going to go off half-cocked all the time. And he did, which his name was right on for him. But God called, Jesus called him Peter, which means rock, and said, I'm going to build my church on you, way before he was Peter the rock that went on to do amazing things in the book of Acts. He called out what was true about him way before it happened. So I think when we have people in our community who are like, not quite there yet, why don't we call out the things that are good that we know are true? Like, so we just pray that God would help us see them the way God sees them. And anyway, I love that he called Peter a rock way before he was a rock. So another thing Jesus did, I think, to battle awkwardness, I don't even know if he battled it, but he wasn't awkward. And one thing he did was he asked a lot of questions. In most of his conversation, he asked questions. Sometimes he asked questions when I think they wanted answers and he turned around and asked another question. But he's God, he can do what he wants. But in conversation and in community and getting over awkwardness, it's good to ask questions. He, interestingly, again, it's a humility thing. God knew everything. He did not need to ask us questions, right? He knew the answer to everything. But he was asking questions not for information, but for transformation. He wanted to dig down deeper into where they were. And so he was asking questions that he knew the answers to just for transformation. So if we want to earn the right or have the place in people's lives where they want to come to us when they have issues or when we want to speak into them, the place that we find hope and the place that we find life in God, they need to know that we love them and we care about them. And one way to do that is to ask questions. So I did some research on questions, and they make people like you, bottom line. They make you more likable. And I'm not saying use it as a tool, but if it works, I mean, use it as a tool. But I think when I interview people for my podcast every week, I basically have an hour-long about them conversation where I just ask questions. And at the end, I'm telling you what, almost always when we're done recording, they're like, that was so fun. Of course it was fun. We talked about you for an hour. You're your favorite person. You know what I mean? So don't be afraid to ask questions. They love talking about themselves. And so do you, right? And so that's what we got to balance, is that we don't go in going, here I am, but there you are. Let me know about you. In my research, though, I found that they did a study in 2017 on a bunch of speed daters. Now that sounds awkward. And in the speed dating situations, they found that the more follow-up questions that were asked, that increased likability even more. So ask a question, they answer, ask a question based on that answer. Follow it up with another question. They love that. That really increased the amount of second dates people got. So if you're single, ask some follow-up questions. And then a fourth way, and Jesus didn't use this for kind of cutting down the awkward when we're trying to build community. I love comedy, and I love studying why things are funny. Like, why can person A say something and it's not funny, but then person B says it and it kills? Like, why? Why is that? So the science behind it is fascinating to me. It's kind of weird. But so in improv, when you just kind of stand up and you have two people stand up and they don't know what they're even going to do and it just kind of happens, there's a technique called yes and. Maybe you're familiar with this. But so the yes is that whatever one person says, you don't have to say the word yes, but you're agreeing with what they said. And that kind of helps you find a common ground. And so maybe you're talking to somebody and you're trying to build community and you don't agree with everything they say. Maybe they have some interesting ideas about things. But pick what you can agree with and go with that. That'll be your yes. But then the and, you kind of push the ball down the field more with an additional comment about that thing. So like, say it was really hot and you said, sure it's hot outside. If someone said, I feel fine, I mean, that stops it right there. Okay. Or it sure is hot outside. Yep. That's the yes. Great. But the and would be like, I picked the wrong day to wear natural deodorant, you know? So that would be a yes and. And it kind of goes, look at us, we have this thing in common. So that's just if some things to think about. I'm going to ask a bunch of follow-up questions, and I'm going to do that yes and improv trick and see if I can't be less awkward in community. So that's my awkward part. But we also have to be stirring ourselves up because there's a heaviness that wants to sink down and keep us from community. Because honestly, community is really inconvenient. And we love convenience. I did a little research. These talks are so fun because I get to look up so much stuff. We don't like, and I get my groceries delivered. I'm not judging. But we don't even have to go in the grocery store anymore if we don't want to. We don't have to buy clothes anymore, like try them on at the store. They just come to our house. And I love all that. There's places that will let you drive up to church in your car and just sit in your car so you can stay in your pajamas, you can bring your cats, I don't know. But so there's community, there's churches that will guarantee that you're in and out in 45 minutes. Like guaranteed, it's like express church. And so we really like convenience. And community, frankly, is very inconvenient. And also, if we are married, I love my husband. He's inconvenient. He finds me inconvenient as well. You know, it's inconvenient. You got kids? That's all they are, is they're lovely and squishy little inconveniences. If you think about it, I'm not being negative. I love my kids, but like, come on. And so we have coworkers. We have people we can't help. We have to deal with. Why on earth would we add more inconveniences into that? I get it. That's why it's something that settles down and we don't want to do it. In my community, we do a lot of things I think are fun. In my neighborhood, we have, like the other day, I was up really early in the morning. I was having my quiet time, but my phone was in my hand. Do you ever do that? You're trying to spend time with the Lord and you're like, why am I looking at my phone? So I was having a quiet time and I saw on Instagram, I thought Jesus was there, but he wasn't. And my friend was had a Christmas in July party, and I was like, oh my gosh, we totally need to do that. But I looked and it was the last day of July. So I texted my girlfriends in my neighborhood. I said, we need to have a Christmas in July party like today. And I said, so come at 6 o'clock and we'll do a white elephant gift and I'll make some cookies. And because my friend on Instagram had gingerbread men, but they were in swimsuits. It was adorable. So I was like, we have to make this happen. I legit had 30 people at my house that night. Like 12 hour notice, a house full of people. It was amazing. So the kids and the grown-ups all participated in the white elephant gift of bring whatever you have in your house. All the men ended up somehow with stuffed animals. It was awesome. And all of, like, the little three-year-old boy got a book about Oprah. I mean, the whole thing was perfect. It couldn't have been better. So that was not inconvenient. That was super fun, and I loved it. My friends in my neighborhood, we realized we didn't know each other until we had already gotten married. So we thought, wouldn't it be fun if we could have like been in each other's weddings? We would have been if we'd known each other. So we went to the Goodwill and we got bridesmaids' dresses. Like, we spent $2. And then we went to the Walmart and we got a bouquet of flowers. And we just, you know, brought some drinks and appetizers and had a bridesmaids' party. We don't even know. I mean, whatever. But that's not inconvenient. That's fun. It's great. But when there's things like, oh, let's, what do they love to do? They love to make flower crowns. My neighbors are really, some of them, very magical and into, like, whimsical. And I'm a little too practical for that. So why are we catching fireflies right now? That's not fun for me. But so we catch fireflies and we make flower crowns. And one time they made, like, wings out of scrapbook paper and wore them. And they're like, come on, Emily. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then they took pictures. So there's documentation of me wearing scrapbook wings. And so I don't know. Sometimes it gets weird. And I don't love that. That's when it gets inconvenient, when things get like that. Neighborhood campouts, when they want me to sleep outside. No, but I do it. Watching other people's kids in my community. I hate that. I don't even like watching my own kids. So I do not want to watch other people's kids. But I do it. But it's inconvenient. Group texts, kill me. I want to throw my phone in a pool. I hate group texts. But They're a part of community. So there's things like that that are inconvenient, but you go, you know what? But I love these people. I need these people to know the Lord. And if they already know the Lord, I want them to know him better. And I need them. That's the other thing is I tend to think I don't need community because I'm pretty self-sufficient and I focus and more appreciate tasks getting done. And so that's where I've had to humble myself in community and realize even if it's inconvenient, I need them. And I've had my girlfriends tell me, you need people more than you think you do, and you're off track. And so, in fact, in July, I took the whole month off of doing new podcast episodes, and that's become my full-time job. I'm not a nurse anymore because I do my podcast, and so it was hard for me to hear that, but if God told us that community is important and they said, you're off track and you need to take a break, I did it. I didn't love it, but I did it, you know? So community is super inconvenient. One really inconvenient thing that happened on my birthday, is this being recorded? Okay. On my birthday, we were having a progressive dinner where there was going to be 6 of us that were, you know, you take an hour or so at a time and have the party at your house. It was a progressive dinner because my birthday is on New Year's Eve. I don't know if I said that. So it was going to be like a 6-hour long party, 6 houses. It's going to be so fine. About 30, 40 people. Well, everybody dropped out except me. And it was my birthday. And so now I've got 30 to 40 people at my house for 6 hours. That's inconvenient. Everybody had a really good reason why, but I'm still really inconvenienced right now. And we made it work and it was fine, blah, 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 but inconvenient, okay? My house has been severely inconvenienced. I've had legit the soap, like tiles ripped off my shower wall by rogue children when nobody, I mean, we're watching, like there's a babysitter. I don't know where she is, but like, there was a big hole in my shower now. I've had wood floor pieces like ripped up, plants unpotted. It's just community is inconvenient. People are messy, but God tells us to invite them in. Just expect that it's gonna mess up your shower. When I had a guy one time came in, and it's tricky when you don't even necessarily like that person. You know what I mean? But he came in, it wasn't on purpose, but he had a brand new energy drink, and he opened it and dropped it, and it dropped and spun like a sprinkler all around my formal dining room, a full energy drink. And I still am finding it on grates and on the baseboards. Like, so community is inconvenient for more than just you. It's inconvenient for your house. It's inconvenient for your kids. But the bottom line is, if community was just about fun, that'd be a good excuse to not do it. But community is not just about fun. God told us to be in community because that is how we share the hope and the life that we found. So it being inconvenient is not a good excuse, unfortunately. But when community feels just too inconvenient, we could look at Jesus' example. He left heaven to rescue us. I would consider that inconvenient. Then he got killed for us. Super inconvenient. But then before he died, he said in John 15, this is my commandment, love one another as I've loved you. That's a tall order. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down their life for their friends. You're my friend if you do what I command you. I think in this room we would call ourselves friends of Jesus. We are in church on a Saturday morning, for heaven's sakes. We are friends of God. But he says, you are my friend if you do what I command you. And what he commanded us to do is lay our life down for our friends. I can clean a baseboard. I can fix a shower. I can put the plant back in the pot. Why did you take it out? I don't even understand. I can put it back in. I can be inconvenient. I can put on wings for, I don't even know why we're doing that. I can do that. That makes you happy? I'll put on wings, whatever. And so we can do that for our friends. If it earns us the right to speak into their lives and share life with them. Incidentally, he did not say, this is my advice, love others. This is my suggestion. He straight up commanded us to do that. It's serious. And then he didn't just command it, he modeled it. He did it. This is what I'm commanding you to do, and I'm going to be a good leader, like any good leader, and they go first, they model it. So he did that for us. And I know you might be thinking, whatever, that's Jesus. He was fully God and fully man, and I can't do that. That's too hard. Okay, let's look at Paul. He was imprisoned, like on the regular. He was beaten countless times. I think if I got beat up, even several times. I don't know how many times. He got beat up so many times he could lost count. What? That's crazy. He was stoned. He was thrown over walls. He went without food, went without water, shipwrecked. And then again, you might go, well, that was Bible times, and he was a missionary. He was crazy, like, excited about Jesus. Well, he had the same commission that we did in Matthew 28, to go and make disciples. He wasn't given a special call that we are not given. And I'm not saying get rocks thrown at you and get thrown over walls. That's not the point. That's hopefully not the goal. But it was a command that he had that we have, same command. And I think that when we really think about God commanded us to do that, I don't want at the end of my life to tell the Lord, yeah, I know you said to do that. I know you did it first. But it was like I couldn't be bothered. Oh, that just like gives me goosebumps. Think about standing before the Lord and saying, I'm so sorry. My couch is white, you know, and I just don't love having people in my house. It's too small. I live in an apartment. Do you think Jesus cares about that? Do you think the people that you invite into your home care about that? I've heard that as an excuse so many times. It's either our stuff's too nice, or we don't have time, or my house is too small. And I gotta say, and I know maybe you liked me earlier, you may not like me now, that's baloney, and it's an excuse. Open your house. Have people over. And I'm gonna tell you though, let's talk about the practicals of inconvenience. I'm not saying if anybody asks you to do anything, you have to do it because you can't not be inconvenienced for the gospel. That's called I don't have any boundaries. That's not good, okay? We need to have boundaries, but we need to push ourselves out of our comfort zones. We can't always say no for the sake of boundaries to where we only are serving ourselves all the time. It's a balance, right? You know why? It makes us depend on the Lord. We hate that. We don't want to depend on the Lord. We want an actual answer so that we don't have to think about whether or not I should do this even though I don't feel like it, or is this really not a good idea and I'm feeling guilty, or is it actual conviction? Like, it's hard for us to know. That's why we need to depend on the Lord. But if we're always saying no, we don't have to depend on him. If we're always saying yes, we're going to run ourselves ragged and be so burned out. So let's talk about practicals for managing the inconvenience as much as we can. Have a hard end time for whatever you're going to do. It's fine to say, I got to have you jokers out of here at 8. I got school in the morning or whatever. Tell them, this is what I want to do. This is what I won't do. It's fine. People respect that. People like to know where the boundaries are. Excuse me. Do it in your front yard. I have a turquoise table in my front yard that my friend Kristen Schell, I don't know if you know about the turquoise table, but just, it doesn't have to be turquoise, but I have a table in my front yard, and so we meet at the table. So if it's just for a quick coffee, just bring your own coffee and sit at the table. It's a gathering place, but I don't have to clean my house, and I don't have to wonder, when are you going to leave? Because I can just get up and go in my house. You can stay at this table as long as you want. I don't care. Make it a potluck. Have people bring stuff. They want to bring stuff. But we feel like, oh, I'm going to have you over for dinner. It must be amazing, and I must provide all of it. No, you don't. Let them bring something. My favorite way to have people over, zero stress. The only rule is you may not go to the store. Come over, bring whatever you have in your fridge. For whatever you were going to eat, just bring it. It's hysterical. You might end up with 75 bags of baby carrots and not a blessed other thing. Who cares? There will be the great carrot feast. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter. So that, you can even see people go, okay, like I can do that. I definitely have a refrigerator. I definitely have some food in it. I can definitely bring it over in a plastic bag. So I would challenge you to do that. It's so fun. It's so fun. Okay, so when you get past the awkwardness of humanity and you lean into the fact that it's going to be inconvenient sometimes, we still have to stir one another up and keep stirring one another up a lot, because frankly, once you get involved in community, you're going to see that it's really disappointing. Unfortunately, it really is. My example of my community is really disappointing. I don't share about that openly on social media, but there's some definite disappointment going on there. Most recently, I bought a murder mystery party. Have you ever been to a murder mystery party? Okay. I've always wanted to go to one, but I bought a 1980s prom murder mystery. So everybody has a character. It tells them what to wear, like what kind of whatever. And so I I had to purchase the party. I printed it all out. I assigned everybody things. It was like 20 people were invited. And everybody had to go on this bright day. Like, it was a kind of a big undertaking, but I was super pumped. So then the day, a couple days before, came, and I got, I love charcuterie, which is like meats and cheeses and grapes and figs and whatever you want to put on this board, and it's amazing. And so I brought, I spent so much money on this food because it was going to be amazing. And I had big plans. I had invested money. I had invested time. I bought a dress, you guys, like a pink ombre, like super ugly 1980s prom dress. And then like the day before, our group of friends, we've almost been friends for like a decade. And we're not a group that has a lot of drama. They got in a big fight. And over something that happened with kids, and I could see everybody's side. I knew why we were upset. But it was stuff like, I don't trust them. I can't be friends with them anymore. There was crying. There was meetings. I tried to do some like conflict resolution at my table in the front yard so that I could just go inside if they wanted to keep fighting or whatever. I did everything I could to try to, anyway, they were like, I'm not coming to the party. Well, I'm not coming. Well, I'm not coming. And I, like, my whole community was dissolving and had nothing to do with me. But I've spent a lot of money on this dumb party and nobody was coming to it. So that was pretty disappointing. They've worked past it. But things like that, you get excited about something and it doesn't ever go the way you think it's going to go in community. It can be really disappointing. I went the other day to a friend's birthday, and she really loves karaoke. And so we were doing karaoke, and I got some important information from my mom about her house, and she was moving, and it was a big deal to me. And so I said, hey, can we, because we were just doing karaoke at her house. We weren't like at a karaoke place. It wasn't like in the middle of a song, but I wanted to share the story really quick. And when I was done, she goes, oh, thank you so much for not talking so long about that. I was like, well, you're welcome. So there's things where I'm like, well, that was important to me. I mean, we just sang, it's between Britney Spears and Madonna. I just wanted to tell you real quick this like little story about my life, like before we sing more songs. But for her, karaoke is a really big deal. And so she was really thankful. She was trying to be nice, but we can just take things and turn them around and be like, how dare you say that to me? Like, I did tell the story quickly, and you're welcome, and I think you're trying to be nice, but for heaven's sakes, I don't ever want to talk to you again. We can decide that we don't want to be friends with people because they're hurtful. The community is disappointing. It just can be. Let's talk about Jesus' community, though. It was the worst, you guys. Do you know about those people? He picked them, and he knows everything. Like, he picked the best people for him, and they were still the worst. They fell asleep every time he asked them to pray. That's pretty impressive. Thomas, he's only going to believe if he sees it. That's pretty awesome. Thanks, Thomas. And I married him. Now that's my name. Bummer. They really never got him or what he was there for or when he was coming back. It was all, they didn't understand him. Peter randomly cut off a guy's ear. Like, that's not appropriate, Peter. He got betrayed for money by one of his friends. They fought over who got to sit by him. Like, are they children? For reals? Peter corrected him when he thought that he was sure that Jesus had got the plan for salvation wrong. So he corrected Jesus. I mean, these people were a mess, okay? So Jesus, when he asked you to be in community, it's not that he had community that was spot on. His community was a train wreck. It's also disappointing, though, community, because it's a really slow process. And when your house is destroyed and you're tired and you've spent money and all these things happen and still nobody is any closer to the Lord, it doesn't feel like, than they were before. I mean, it just can feel like, and not that community, the only reason is to tell people about Jesus, but when that's your heart, is to love them well, and then nothing happens, as far as you know, it can be hard. The good thing is, though, our hope is in the Lord. Our hope is not in our community. And so we can continue to do what he's commanded us to do, be obedient. And we don't have to worry about the outcome. We just have to worry about, obviously, the obedience. What I'm not saying is to be friends with people who are mean to you. Don't stay with people who are abusing you or being mean or taking advantage. I'm not saying that. My community of girlfriends, they're lovely and they love me. But just know that the first thing, that when things get messy, that doesn't mean you need to be out. That's not what we're called to do. What I am saying, though, is to overlook annoying behavior inconvenient behavior, awkward behavior, overlook it. It says in Proverbs, it's a glory to overlook an offense. That's an opportunity. Community is going to give you a lot of chances to be glorious because those people are messed up. And I don't even know who's in your community. They're messed up. Because you're messed up. Because we're all messed up. So I wanted to show some practical tips. The conflict field guide, my church, I go to a church called Watermark, and it's in Dallas. And they, you can Google conflict field guide. It's a PDF that you can download for free. And it's it just takes you scripturally through what to do. And they always are saying that conflict is a constant opportunity. So when things are disappointing and we have conflict, which we will, and I'm going to burst your bubble. If you're not having conflict, it's because you're avoiding conflict. It's because you're faking peace. Everybody has conflict, so don't be proud of the fact that you don't have conflict. You've got some stuff going on if you never have conflict. And so they call it a constant opportunity, and it's getting so much easier, and our body is quite healthy because we openly and quickly and humbly talk about conflict. So that's a great guide. Put the inconvenience and the disappointment in perspective. 2 Corinthians says, don't lose heart. This light and momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. So don't look to the things that are seen, but look to the things that are unseen. Those are eternal. So when you're being disappointed by your community right now, zoom out. Look at the big picture. There's more than what you're seeing right now. So keep that perspective. The third thing I would say to do when community is disappointing is to really ask God to help you see them. Like he saw the woman and he called her daughter. He didn't see her and go, this is a poor woman who has a lot of medical problems. He saw her and called her daughter because that's what she was. So when you have people in your life and you are really disappointed by them, ask God to help you see them the way he sees them. And he's faithful. He wants you to see them the way he sees them. So this is not like a strange prayer or one that he's going to not want to answer. He's going to want to answer that. And then finally, my friend Elisa Keaton, she started Revelation Wellness. It's like a fitness and faith type of ministry. And she just tells me just to have gracious assumptions about people. Just assume, it's assume the best, but I like gracious assumptions better. Just like I said with my friend with karaoke, she loves karaoke. So she wasn't thinking, shut up, you talk too much. She was thinking, I really, really want to sing this song by Britney Spears. Thank you so much for making your thing short on my birthday that's about karaoke, not about your mom moving. Okay, got it. So if you can just assume the best about people, you can get on to the Britney Spears and not have your feelings hurt. So anyway, in closing, there's a lot of reasons why it takes a lot of effort and intention to stir up love. It's because community is awkward, it's inconvenient, and it's disappointing. But pushing past the barriers is worth it. It's worth it for you. My life is so much more rich and full because of all the kooky friends that I have in my neighborhood who I do life with on a regular basis. But it's worth it for them. I can see them being open to hearing from God. I can see them, they ask me questions when they're having a hard time. I'm the one they come over and say, tell me about meditation. Tell me about, they're asking questions about, I'm feeling depressed and I've heard you talk about that. Or how do you do this? And tell me this about your marriage. So they consider me, if nothing else, they consider me a source of wisdom. And I would consider that's a big process, a progress, right? And so, the good thing is that when it's awkward, we can remember that we have an opportunity to trust God. He's our helper. So when it's awkward and we don't know what to do, we have a helper. And when it's inconvenient, we can remember that we're walking in the footsteps of our humble King who went first. He was way more inconvenienced than you ever have been about community. I promise you. And when it's disappointing, we can remember that we have a hope that's eternal, and our hope is in Christ. It's not in our community. And so I wanted to tell you, if you're a podcast listener, I feel gross, like, telling you about my podcast, but I also have made a resource, and I interview people who are way smarter than me. So if you're interested, if you listen to podcasts, I pulled out the ones that are about community. So the podcast is called Struggle Well Project, and the number 86 is my friend Chantel Brewer. She does Taco Tuesday, and we started doing that as well, and it's amazing. You can hear about that in that. Kristen Schell, 92, episode 92. She's the turquoise table girl who has a turquoise table in her front yard. And then 100, episode 100 is the people in my neighborhood. So I sat around with all my best girlfriends in my neighborhood, and we talk about conflicts we've had and what's working and what's not working. We have like a 15-year age difference among the moms. We have lots of different barriers to our friendship, and yet we're like the best of friends. So that one, episode 132 is my pastor, Rob, and he talks about conflict and how to conflict well with people. And then episode 134 was a girl named Jen, and she just talks about opening her home. And so anyway, those are just some of the ones that I really knew were about community. But anyway, that's really all I have. So thank you for listening. The end.